This is a community service announcement.
This week, it was revealed that vapes may soon become available at Australian pharmacies without a prescription. The changes to the Albanese government's crackdown on vaping products follows a recent deal with the Greens. It's a controversial change that has a lot of people talking about how helpful it will actually be. To walk us through the changes, we're joined by Professor Janine Jancy from the Curtin School of Population Health. Thanks for joining me on the record this morning.
Wonderful to be here.
So what are the primary concerns regarding the watering down of the vape ban?
Okay, so as a public health person and as public health groups, there was a real push for vaping products that contain nicotine to be made Schedule 4 drugs, which meant that they needed a prescription from a doctor, which would also provide an opportunity for education and support for quitting. So these are seen as cessation devices. However, as you said, negotiations with the Greens meant that these have been, legislation has been watered down. Initially, I was really disappointed, but I think it's a fairly good compromise. I think it's now, as a Schedule 3, you still need to purchase it from a pharmacy, so it's no longer available on street corners at retail stores. The products will be in plain packaging, so they won't be bright and frilly. Nicotine levels will be controlled, and there will also have to, you'll have to be over 18 to purchase these products. Otherwise, if you're under 18, you will need a prescription. And the other great thing is no longer will there be those range of flavours. There will only be menthol, mint and tobacco. So although I must say I was initially very disappointed, this is a world first, making this drug a Schedule 3 and making it only available through pharmacies. And when I thought about it, I think it's a really good outcome.
Was there a particular situation or circumstance that prompted the government's decision to amend the legislation?
Look, I think to get it through the Senate, they proposed vapes to be classified as a Schedule 4. But in order to get it through the Senate, they needed the support of the Greens, and the Greens would not support that. They wanted the drug classified as a Schedule 3. They thought that would make it more accessible to people who wanted to quit smoking, and they thought that it would make it more accessible and less expensive. So no longer did they have to go to a GP to get a prescription.
So how do you believe these changes will affect or improve anti-smoking efforts?
Look, I think everything will need to be monitored on how this new initiative goes over time, like, you know, 2-3 years down the track, how is it working? Okay, so these products were initially touted as smoking devices, but smoking cessation devices, but as we know, they have become recreational drugs. And we've seen that particularly among young people with the, I think 1 in 6 young people have used a vape in the last month, and they're 12 to 17-year-olds. So what has happened is that rather than being seen as a cessation device, they've become a recreational device. So putting them in smart pharmacies will enable them to be accessed for what they were originally said to be, a smoking cessation device, but they will make access more challenging. No longer can you walk into a tobacconist and buy a vape or a local retailer selling these products. So the impact it will have on smoking will yet to be seen, and clinical trials looking at the impact of these products on smoking cessation have been pretty unsure. Some studies saying they have impact and others saying that they don't. So yes, we'll need to see. But if people want to use these products as a last line of approach to smoking cessation, they can get them from their pharmacy.
And it's good that the ones with nicotine are only available through pharmacies where a doctor or a physician is able to have a conversation with the person buying it and what uses they want it for.
That's right. And I know the Pharmacy Guild has expressed some concern about their pharmacists needing education and support around this product, and their concerns around no product has been actually approved by the TGA, but I'm sure that will come. The Albanese government has invested significantly in vaping prevention efforts, as we have seen with this new campaign on television around vaping and the dangers of it. But there will be, like with anything, there'll be a few hurdles, but I think with the correct investment and support, they can be overcome.
You're listening to On the Record, and I'm joined by Professor Janine Jansen, and we're discussing how vapes can soon be sold over a pharmacy counter without the need for a prescription. So how should pharmacies handle the responsibility of selling vapes without having to go to a GP and getting that prescription?
Well, I think we all respect pharmacists. They're well trained. They complete quite an extensive degree. And I know I seek pharmacy advice for certain things. So I think they're equipped with the background knowledge, but they will need to be perhaps educated further around these products and around how to use to give advice to people.
So what are some of the known health risks associated with long-term vaping?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because vapes haven't been around for that long. They were only introduced to the US market in 2007. So unlike smoking, which has been, we've known the risks of smoking since the 1950s, we don't really know the long-term risks of vaping, although they are emerging. So we know in the short term, people, irritation of the throat, coughing, nausea, and increasingly there's research pinpointing associations with chronic lung disease, asthma, and heart disease. So these products contain over 200 chemicals. Some of them are carcinogenic. Some of them are heavy metals. So they're not harmless products. And I think we've got to go back to thinking about what our lungs were for. They were made to breathe in air, to oxygenate our body, not to breathe in an aerosol containing over 200 chemicals.
Yeah, it definitely does make it a little bit difficult for the government and doctors and pharmacies with something that's still fairly new and not a lot of background research. But I guess we can look a little bit at research that's been done on smoking and kind of see the comparisons, well, the similarities and the differences.
Look, I think, and it's like vaping is smoking's little brother, little sibling. It's the same thing in a different form. Mm. And I think perhaps people lose sight of that, and I think they need to be reminded that it's less harmful than smoking, but it's not harmless.
So with this new legislation that is soon to be implemented and the changes that we'll see pharmacies selling vape products, how effective do you think this model will be in comparison to what the original model was said to be?
Yeah, the original model was very ambitious. The prescription model was introduced, but what happened was that retailers could still sell non-nicotine vapes, and this created this loophole. So it's very difficult to differentiate between nicotine and non-nicotine vapes. It requires extensive and expensive lab testing to determine that, and that proved unworkable. So this loophole fueled a dramatic rise in young people vaping, with nearly an increase of, you know, three times over a period of about 5 years in young people. So that was really problematic. Even though the intention was good, there was this issue around retailers selling nicotine vapes and getting people addicted. Did I answer your question?
That's right. We're just talking about the differences between the models and will this one new model be more effective?
Yeah. So there was a real loophole, and there was also, there's a lot of other things happening. So there's they were being imported very readily, and they were just pouring over the borders these products, particularly disposable vapes, which were particularly attractive to young people, and no one knew if they contained nicotine or didn't contain nicotine. So that was the main loophole, whereas now, no, retailers can't sell these products. These products will only be available in pharmacies, and so I think this offers a really great opportunity, and I'm quite optimistic about it.
This morning we've been talking all about the changes to the Albanese government's crackdown on vaping products. Before I let you go, what do you expect to see over the next few weeks to months as these changes are discussed further and eventually rolled out?
Look, what I really want to see is them passed by the Senate. And then where there is allocated money to raise awareness in the community, so they're may well be some education campaigns. I hope they'll start thinking about how to make this a supportive model, particularly for pharmacists, as long as it is passed by the Senate. So I think I'm hoping that it'll all go smoothly, but there might be some hiccups and there might be some pushback from tobacco companies, but I'm not sure.
Well, Professor Jansey, thank you so much for joining us on the record once again and having a chat about these new vaping legislations.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. That was Professor Janine Jansey from the Curtin School of Population Health walking us through the recent announcement regarding vape purchases. Changes to the Albanese government's crackdown on vaping products will see pharmacies selling them over the counter without a prescription. I would love to know your thoughts on these recent changes. You can send me a text on 0405 921 921, or you can email in at studio@rtrfm.com.au.